Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now on Last Call, if it's Boeing, are you going? Another one of its jets hit by a safety incident. We'll show it to you. Bitcoin's rocket ride is another major milestone for prices just ahead. We'll get some insight. Outshining American stocks, the hottest places to make money right now, maybe overseas. We'll show you where. Is your car spying on you and selling your driving data to insurance companies? A stunning report revealing details that all of you will want to see and hear. Another mega deal in energy. The CEO behind it joins us exclusively. Plus, it is Make It Mondays, and you won't believe how much money is pouring in from coconut water. All that and more over the hour, so belly up or buckle up. Last Call is up right now. Well, good evening here. Good afternoon out west. I am Brian Sullivan. All that and more coming up across the hour. But first up on Last Call, President Biden's big-time tax plan. The president unveiling today his $7.3 trillion budget for next year. It involves a ton of potential tax changes, mostly targeting higher-income families and corporations. Now, PIMCO looked through the proposals, and this is what they dug out and came up with. First, on the personal tax side, the plan would be to raise the top-end tax rate back to 39.6 from 37%. That's on income over $578,000. It would tax capital gains on top earners at the same level as ordinary income. Right now, that's 20%. So if you're in the high bracket, that could nearly double your capital gains rate at the very top. It would also raise the so-called Obamacare tax to 5% from 3.8%. It would impose a minimum wealth tax of 25% on families with more than $100 million in wealth, not income. Now, remember, these are proposed increases on the personal side. There is more on the corporate side, including, as you heard at the State of the Union, raise the corporate tax rate to 28% from 21% and raise the minimum corporate tax rate to 21% from 15%. Again, like all presidential budgets, Biden's 2025 plan is more of a wish list than policy and likely won't pass as is. And by the way, there are some tax cuts in there as well, things like mortgage credits for new home buyers. But with debt and deficits exploding and no talk of spending cuts, are we ultimately going to have to eat some or all of these tax increases? Joining us now is former North Dakota Senator and UChicago Institute of Politics Director Heidi Heitkamp and founder and CEO of Built Rewards, Ankur Jain. Senator, start with you. That's a lot of tax hikes.
It is, but it's unrealistic. It's not going to happen. It didn't even happen when he had a majority because the moderate Democrats pushed back against a lot of this. And so at the end of the day, you've got to think about how this is lobbyist fodder. I mean, they're going to make tons of money beating the drum with clients saying, let's stop this, but it's not realistic. But what I will tell you is in 2025, the 17 tax provisions will in fact expire. And that's going to be the first opportunity to take a look at the tax code overall, because they're going to have to try and figure out how they extend the provisions for standard deductions, what they do with the SALT deduction. And that's where you really need to think about what's going to happen with tax policy.
Well, Ankur, the SALT deduction, which is a cap on how much you can deduct, it mostly benefits higher earners in high tax, i.e. blue states. I get that, but this is not just a thing targeted to the rich. That SALT deduction cap, I mean, if you're a family of two in New Jersey making a combined $300,000, you're probably paying $20,000 in property tax on your house in addition to other deductions. You would know if you called them rich, you'd probably get punched in the face. And so that deduction cap is really going to be a big deal, I think, in a couple of years.
Yep. I mean, look, the other thing I just keep adding to this is the tax wish list that he's proposing is never going to happen. But what scares me more is the mindset of the nonstop spending. I mean, the reason $300,000 doesn't feel rich these days is because inflation has gone off the charts over the last few years. And they just continue to spend more and more and more. And I look at this coming up as a, you know, a millennial into the workforce. I mean, how in the world are we going to continue to sustain spending budgets like this, where it's just throw more and more money at it and pretend like you're going to raise it on any of these taxes? It just doesn't work. And so I look at this and I think to myself, people are a little bit skeptical after the COVID stimulus that just threw so much money into the economy and drove so much inflation, that to see the Democrats put up this proposal now and just expect people to believe that it's going to fund itself and not either lead to significantly higher inflation or taxes on everybody else, I think that's a tough pill to swallow.
Well, it is, Senator. And listen, that's the side, right? We're always talking about, well, we need to raise this and we need to raise that. And by the way, most of the numbers that the government, both parties, by the way, throw around in terms of how much this tax increase may cost or how much it may bring in are almost never accurate. They're always wildly overstated for the most part. And so you think, well, if we do this, then this will happen. Why is it impossible in today's political climate to talk about, if you're the president, to talk about any spending cuts whatsoever?
Well, they've got to start talking about spending cuts. But the problem is the Democrats want to talk about raising revenue. And you have, you know, the Republicans taking a pledge, never know how. And the Democrats saying, you know, well, let's spend more money. Let's do this. Let's stimulate. And at the end of the day, you can't keep spending. But we all know that that these discretionary programs that we've been talking about, they pale in comparison to so-called entitlement programs. And, you know, the president, the former president today on Squawk Box talked about what he would do. That's now exploded. And so it becomes the holy grail. And if you aren't going to have a realistic conversation about what you do with that, you're not serious about debt and deficit reduction.
Well, in fact, they're going to use the part of the Trump interview in a campaign ad. Biden is going to use part of that interview this morning, apparently, in a campaign ad, because they want to scare people into thinking, Anchor, that we're going to take stuff away. And by the way, it's a powerful argument. I always say you get elected promising to give people things. You do not get elected promising to take things away. And when people hear, well, you're going to reduce spending for grandma's health care or for housing, it can be an extremely powerful message. Everybody wants the tax the other person.
If I could just point out there's a whole theory behind modern monetary, you know, theory that you can just spend and don't worry about it. I think that's crazy. And we've got to start being realistic about fiscal discipline.
Okay, by the way, I think that is going to play a bigger and bigger role in the upcoming elections, because more and more of the voting population is looking at this and realizing this is going to be a wheel that eventually stops, and I'm going to be the one left holding the bag after years and years of putting into the system. So I think that tide is turning. I would have hoped, with Biden and the contender both being second term candidates, that there would be a little bit more willingness to talk about how they're finally going to rip the Band-Aid off on some of these issues and actually try to make an impact that is sustainable. It's one thing coming in as a new candidate, but when you're looking at, I think you'll see a change in President Trump's tune of voice, too. I mean, he 180'd on TikTok. I'm sure you saw that the other day.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he comes in and says something to counter now Biden's approach on big spend and says, guys, we are going to bring the country back. And that may actually be a powerful message that both rallies the Republicans on the moderate side and his kind of further out coalition.
And what I, you know, yeah, on, you, and we got to go, but Senator, one thing I will say is one thing I don't like is that there's a lot of demonization of certain groups, right? And I know there's, you know, it's easy to go after the rich. I get it. Just go after millionaires and billionaires. But there's a lot of claims that are, if not wrong, are straddling the truth in terms of this tax rate versus what somebody else pays. I just don't know if it's good for the country to sort of demonize, not demonize success, but basically imply that people aren't doing their, quote, fair share.
Right. Here, the numbers are the numbers. And when people say we're going to make sure everybody pays 25%, my take is that most people who earn $1 million are already paying 25% or more as their, you know, kind of marginal tax rate. And so let's just get real. Let's talk about this the way adults talk about this, the way families talk about this. Unfortunately, we're in a campaign season and it's going to be finger pointing all around and we aren't going to get anything done. And I think the former president did very little to reduce deficit. He once said on this network that I'm the king of debt. I will take care of debt. And what he meant, he's going to pay 80 cents on the dollar. That won't work with our full faith and credit. And so we've got to be serious. And I think both sides have to be serious.
And I've said both sides. I would say they spend like drunken sailors. But as I said to you before, Senator, I do not want to insult drunken sailors. Uncle Jane, Senator Heidi Heitkamp, thank you both very much. A lot of tax hikes, folks. All right, let's take a look at what happened to your money today. Mixed bag. Not a lot happened. Dow up 46, S&P and NASDAQ down slightly inside the market. Your stud and dud, the big winner of the day, was Moderna, up more than 8%. Excitement growing for its potential mRNA technology being used on other things besides COVID. The big decliner, EQT, they made a major deal, and EQT CEO Toby Rice will join us live here in just a couple of minutes. Let's also get a quick check on your futures, and they are mildly in the green. All right, up next, shares of one cloud giant making investors money right now, the name and the move ahead. Plus, if you think Bitcoin prices are high now, what do you see what might be coming? And soon.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
All right, let's get down to tomorrow's news tonight. First up, Oracle, seeing into the future. And apparently, it's bright. Company beating earnings expectations, cloud services, and license support saw a 12% jump in sales. They say it's due to strong demand for, you guessed it, AI servers. And investors liking what they are seeing. Oracle shares are up 13.5% right now to $129.71, either just at or even maybe just above Oracle's all-time highs. All right, next up, Rupert Murdoch's News Corp holding talks about a potential joint takeover of England's Telegraph newspaper. The deal would be with the UAE-backed investment fund Redbird, that according to the Telegraph, News Corp not moving much on the news after hours. And finally, Vail Resorts stock is down on earnings and, I guess, bad weather. Ski resort operator missing estimates and cutting its full-year guidance over lower snowfall totals in the North American West. It's probably not over snow. It's probably over skiers who go to ski on the snow. Vail Resort stock down just about 4% right now. All right, turning to Bitcoin and the rally that just won't stop. The crypto hitting another record, bursting above 72,000. And some analysts and fans say it could soon hit 100,000. And it's not just Bitcoin. Ether broke 4,000 for the first time since December of 2021. One catalyst for that move today, a British financial watchdog saying it would allow requests for the UK's version of spot Bitcoin ETFs 2 months after the SEC's approval. And even former President Trump is appearing to get behind Bitcoin. On an interview with Squawk Box this morning, he suggested he would not crack down on Bitcoin if reelected.
it's an additional form of currency. And I used to say, you know, I want one currency. I want the dollar. I don't want people leaving the dollar. And I feel that way. But I will tell you, it has taken on a life. There has been a lot of use of that. And I'm not sure that I'd want to take it away at this point.
All right, let's bring in Bitcoin technician, not just a Bitcoin technician. Todd Gordon does all kinds of stuff. He is the founder of Inside Edge Capital and TradingAnalysis.com, also a CNBC contributor, and a man who has greatly upgraded his home studio over the years, Todd, and we appreciate it. It's a good look. Thanks for joining us. Before you go into the charts on Bitcoin, charting Bitcoin, sure. Is it the same as charting an equity that has earnings, that has other things, or... is a chart a chart?
Interesting question. No, it's a very emotionally driven product, Brian, which makes it the patterns, I think, a little bit more recognizable. I mean, the fundamentals are fairly limited. We're trading very much based on, you know, significantly discounting what it's going to do for us in the future. And as people don't trade based on decisions and data that's forthcoming now, we're always looking into the future. And again, the more emotional and volatile the market is, usually the more technical it is.
Yeah, and I would imagine that if I said the charts look good, I'd probably sound foolish because the sides are Bitcoin's at a record high. But is there any sign that it's overcooked?
No, I don't think so. I really like the way Bitcoin handled sort of the old high from 2021. And I think there's very much a correlation to the growth trade, specifically tech stocks and even more specifically semiconductors. And as you know, we know what happened Friday with all the high flying semis, they came off so hard. Bitcoin just kind of took a little bit of a breather, then opened up Sunday night and just cruised up to new highs. So there's either sort of a decoupling between the growth and tech stocks, or Bitcoin perhaps is trading on its own merits. I hold it personally. I hold the cash Bitcoin. I hold an ETF in our research business. Actually, I just added a little bit today, and I don't yet hold it in the wealth management, but a little bit of a pullback, and I might for the first time put this IBIT to work in my RA.
Wow. Bullish view there, not only technically, but personally. We like it. Bitcoin I like it.
It's not a bad observation you make. We're breaking new highs. I wonder too. I mean, you know, is it inflationary reaction or not? I mean, we have gold moving up, but we have interest rates under control. FX is quiet. You know, is it maybe foretelling that the overall growth trade and specifically semis are going to come ripping back? I wonder if crypto's acting as a leading indicator here.
Yeah. Well, listen, crypto's up, gold's up, stock market's up, real estate's up, everything's up. Todd Gordon. Glad you're up. Thank you. See you soon. All right, still ahead. Again, yet another Boeing jet involved in a safety incident, this time over the water. Former United Airlines CEO Oscar Munoz here to help you get some answers into what exactly is going on.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Oh, I got a news alert with some sad developments that are kind of tied to Boeing. Reports just coming in about a former Boeing employee who is considered a whistleblower who's been found dead. 62-year-old John Barnett died from what police are describing as a self-inflicted wound on Sunday in Charleston, South Carolina. His body was reportedly found in his truck outside of a hotel. Barnett was a Boeing employee for 32 years, working as a quality manager. He retired in 2017. And Barnett most notably alleged that Boeing workers had been pressured to fit substandard parts to 787 Dreamliners during his time at Boeing's North Charleston plant. The company denied his claims, but according to the BBC, Barnett was giving evidence in recent days in a whistleblower lawsuit against Boeing. A lot of the details are still coming in, but we're going to bring them to you, of course, if we get to them. Thoughts with his family. All right, staying with Boeing, its air travel woes continue to pile on. Today, about 50 people were injured on a Boeing 787-9 Dreamliner that was traveling from Sydney, Australia to New Zealand. It was on the Chile-based airline LATAM. The airline says it was caused by a, quote, technical event during the flight, which caused a strong movement. That's their wording. They did not elaborate further. Some people called it turbulence, but the airline itself was saying a technical event. One passenger says the plane just seemed to drop out of the sky so quickly that another passenger who was not wearing his seatbelt, apparently, ended up on the ceiling. Scary stuff, and glad the plane ultimately did land safe. And while the exact cause of this is unclear, whether it was technical or wind or whatever, it adds to a growing list of Boeing-related incidents. On Friday, a United Airlines Boeing 737 rolled off the runway shortly after landing in Houston. Thursday, Japan-bound United 777 apparently lost a tire as it took off, crushing some cars below. Last Monday, fire coming out of a United Boeing 737 flight's engine bound for Florida from Houston. And reports of a San Francisco-bound United Boeing 757 flight from Honolulu suffering an engine failure over the Pacific Ocean. Boeing shares dropping 3% today, down more than 26% this year. And Boeing just reportedly got hit with a criminal investigation. And this is what's interesting. Apparently, flyers, you all out there, are starting to take notice. According to Kayak, a popular travel site that allows users to filter searches by aircraft type, usage of that filter is spiking. Kayak CEO telling us, quote, it's hovering about 10x the usage we saw last year. Meaning if it's Boeing, apparently, or at least the 737, many aren't going. Is that heightened scrutiny valid? Let's take it to former United Airlines CEO Oscar Munoz, CBC contributor as well. Oscar, is there an issue at Boeing, or is this just literally a series of just bad events that are happening in such a tight period of time that it gives the impression there's a bigger issue?
You know, my vantage point, of course, is from the United events that you highlighted in your reel. And I can tell you that each one of those was a very much of a separate event. One skidded off the road because of the tarmac, just because it was slippery. So not really an aircraft issue, but it is, you know, the ongoing saga and drama that is really weighing on people's fears, people's trust. From a perspective of a frequent flyer, I don't think about that, but that's not for me to say, right? Perception is reality. And so sad to hear the opening story with regards to somebody that took their lives allegedly. And so that's just an ongoing aspect of what has to happen there. And I'll tell you, I have a lot of friends and I know a lot of people from there. And we're all rooting for Boeing. And I think you see the industry, you know, really wanting to support because we need Boeing back. It's a critical part of this country's economic sort of infrastructure. And we root for them. But boy, these stories just keep on piling up and it is getting difficult.
Oscar, I may not be on it as much as you, but I'm on United almost weekly. I've got almost, I think, a million miles now actual in the air. And I'm going out on Friday. I'm not thinking about it. But I am the guy that looks at the plane, right? But I'll get on any plane right now. But I am now starting to pay more attention. But you and I are probably different. For the casual traveler, if I hear that searches to filter out specific airplanes are 10x, that's telling.
Yeah, there's no question. And that's a data point, and it's coming from Kayak. That's a different flyer than the business traveler, for sure. But regardless of all of that, again, these are all alarming trends, and certainly Boeing and its leadership need to really pay attention to how they begin to build a plan and a structure that can reassure and regain the trust of all flyers, and because increasingly this becomes a much more of an issue. And you know, I think Boeing's a great company. They lost a lot of people during COVID, and you know it's not only the intelligence and smartness which they have and the professionalism. There's also the experience, and I think the combination of a loss of that has certainly impacted. You know, things like safety and things like quality are very, very much a culture thing, and there's a lot of work to be done there. And then what hampers a company like Boeing and even an airline is anytime these things happen, there has to be an investigation. And of course, everybody has to remain silent while the NTSB actually does their work. And so it's hard to respond to these events. And I know a little insight into what happened in United, so I can tell you each one of those. But again, we can't talk about it publicly. But Boeing really has to make a concerted effort to begin to regain the trust of the flying public and its customers. And you know, part of it is they're going to have to really, you know, simply listen hard and learn from all of that before they lead.
This LATAM flight today was LATAM. Okay, we're still waiting to hear what that was. The rest were United. You know, you've been gone for a number of years now. Do you think that United's got a problem now?
No, I mean, these people have such great pride in professionals. Unless, a wheel bearing on an aircraft is an issue. Skidding off the road is not necessarily an aircraft issue. One of the other issues was a different, you know, there was an Airbus incident for sure involved in this process. So they are unrelated per se. The fact that they happened over 7 to 8 days, we had bubble wrap in being ingested into the engine. You know, again, all of these are not aircraft issues or maintenance issues. There's a myriad of them, but unfortunate, the series of events, as you so cleanly outlined, is the growing concern, and it all points to Boeing. And once you get in that, we've all been there, once you get into that spotlight, boy, it's hard to get out of there. And, you know, but for the things that have been going on for the past 6 months, any one of these events might have been a singular issue, but now they get grouped together, and you and I talk about it on national TV.
Well, when a plane comes out down fast enough that somebody is lifted up and is stuck against the ceiling, that gets my attention, and not in a good way.
I have no idea what a technical issue is for sure. It sounds like turbulence, but I don't know why they didn't say it. So we'll know more about that as that investigation follows. So,
thank you. There might be a language barrier given it's a South American airline, but I agree that there's sort of explanations, kind of a word salad. It's kind of hard to understand what they're talking about.
I speak Spanish, and the word turbulence is the word turbulence.
And by the way, a lot of that, so actually quickly on that, most of the headlines, if people are Googling it right now, it'll say turbulence, but the airline used technical issue that caused a sudden something or other. Do you have any idea why they would do that?
Pure hypothesis. Somebody answered a question without thinking through it. Didn't have the exact details, and it just said something that sounded very odd, which just made it a bigger issue, right? But again, until it's investigated, I don't know. I've never known an aircraft to do that kind of thing without the concept of the turbulence and the
We may indeed find out. It was just really nasty weather, especially when you're above an ocean. You get all kinds of different air currents. Oscar Munoz, really appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right, coming up, the new mega deal shaking up energy. And yes, it even involves AI. Toby Rice of EQT joins us exclusively. Plus, is your car spying on you and selling your data? A shocking report next. All right, bonus, tomorrow's news tonight, because the ratings for last night's Academy Awards just crossed. Now, the good news, the Oscars hit a 4-year high in total views, according to ABC, 19.5 million viewers. Also, the third straight year of viewership growth. The bad news is that in 2014, 10 years ago, the Oscars did 43 million viewers. Now, these Oscars did peak at 21.9 million. In the last half hour, that's when they announced most of the big awards. But considering that they did double that 10 years ago, take your pick. Meantime, the energy mega deals just keep rolling in. Natural gas production company EQT buying back its former pipeline unit called Equitrans Midstream. Now, the headline value of the deal is about $5.5 billion. Investors did not like the deal today, EQT falling about 8%. It all comes at a time when natural gas prices are also falling, down 30% over the past year. So let's talk about all this with the man who did the deal. That is EQT President and CEO Toby Rice. Toby, good to chat with you again. Evercore ISI sort of speculated that part of this deal was defensive, that you didn't want your former pipeline company being bought by somebody bigger. Is that part of the thinking here?
No, this was, I would consider, an offensive move. I think, Sully, when you look at the macro environment, one thing that's clear is that we are going to be in a volatile energy environment. This is because energy demand has grown 50% for natural gas over the last 15 years, but storage infrastructure has only grown 10%. That means it's insufficient to manage the pricing. So you're going to see pricing manage the supply-demand fundamentals. That means a volatile market. You're going to see periods of time where gas prices are too. You're going to see prices that are going to be significantly higher than that. We're in a volatile world, and that's why this transaction is going to enable EQT to thrive in this volatile environment.
Well, Evercore also says the strategic benefits here outweigh the near-term dilution to free cash flow. So what do you think investors missed today, Toby?
Well, I think in any all-stock transaction, you know, you're going to see a headline on dilution, but the merits of this deal are incredibly exciting. You know, this is a strategic combination that is going to create America's first large-scale, fully integrated operator that's going to be transformative in our ability to advance our mission to make our energy cheaper, more reliable, and cleaner. Sully, the big thing here is that this deal, bringing in these midstream costs, is going to be transformative, bringing our cost structure down to sub $2. And what that means is that we're going to be able to enable generating free cash flow in a downside scenario. And because of that, we're protected in the downside. Mm-hmm. That means we can mitigate hedging, and that is going to unleash upside exposure for our investors. In addition to that, it's also going to high grade and deepen our already peer leading inventory. And it's really going to enable us to compete on a global stage and also compete domestically with the cheapest, most reliable energy in the country.
How much of this has to do with getting gas to power plants that just happen to be near Northern Virginia, the data center capital of probably the world?
Well, that's why they call it Data Center Alley. And there is a lot of excitement in the natural gas markets. You know, we've talked a lot about LNG, but one market that's emerging that we are equally as excited about is the AI boom that's taking place. And, you know, as you mentioned, these assets, Mountain Valley Pipeline, is servicing Data Center Alley by delivering our energy to the southeastern portion of the United States. The question is, how big could this be? Well, considering one mm-hmm. NVIDIA chip uses about the amount of energy as a Tesla, and they're putting about 2 million of these chips into the world every year, there's estimates by 2030 that AI use could be bigger than residential power demand. That would be a 20% increase in electricity.
Yeah.
And that would translate to a market of about 16 BCF a day, which is equivalent to what we're doing from an LNG perspective. You know, Sully, one important thing that mm-hmm. I think is really important to mention is that these numbers may sound unbelievable, but you can look at some of the experts in tech and what they're doing. And while this is an anecdote, did you notice who Mark Zuckerberg just added to his board?
John Arnold, natural gas trader.
And he may not be a household name, but in our industry, he is the GOAT of energy trading. And I think that is a signal that AI use mm-hmm. power demand is going to be big. And with this transaction, EQT is positioned to serve that growing market.
Toby Rice, thank you. Now, in the meantime, for those of you listening on the car radio, you might want to pay extra attention to how you're driving right now, because some of your cars and the car companies may be spying on you and sharing or selling information to your insurance company. That's according to a bombshell new report from the New York Times. The paper reports that some automakers are monitoring your driving habits, including how fast you're going, how hard are you braking, where are you going, how long are you there. It's an amazing story and well worth a read. And joining us now is the New York Times reporter behind it, Kashmir Hill. Kashmir, thanks for joining us. I know that the car with all of its interconnected devices is sort of tracking what I do and where I go. Your story really was amazing, and it opened my eyes to the fact that maybe Americans now understand why their insurance rates are suddenly going higher.
Look, your car is a smartphone with really comfortable seats. Cars are just data collectors now. They're internet connected, and they can send all that data back to car makers. And yeah, this was a crazy story. It started for me. I was on car forums and I started seeing drivers of cars made by General Motors say that their insurance rates were going up. And when they asked the agents why, they said, go pull your LexisNexis report. And LexisNexis Risk Solutions is one of these companies that does risk scoring for people. And so they would go to LexisNexis, get their consumer disclosure report, and find it had all the trips that they had taken in their car, including when they drove, how far they drove, how many times they hit the brakes too hard, how many times they rapidly accelerated. And they had no idea that that data had been collected about them.
And we know that smartphones do this. And to your point, we know that cars do this. But I think, again, what really kind of caught me, Kashmir, about this was that many people were not aware this was being done. The car companies, to your point, would say, well, it's there in the fine print, effectively. But nobody's reading hundreds of pages or whatever it is of documents. And that, you know, they don't know why you hit 81 miles an hour. Maybe you were avoiding another accident. But now, all of a sudden, the insurance company thinks, hey, this guy's speeding all the time.
And right, this is not happening to everyone, okay? There are some automakers who have created these features in their car apps. And they're called driver score or driver feedback. With General Motors, it was called Smart Driver. And if you turn it on, it would give you feedback about your driving. It would give you a score. It would say, you're braking too much, slow down a little bit. And what people didn't realize when they turned on these features is that data brokers were the ones that were often running the programs, and that your data was being shared with LexisNexis or another data broker called Verisk, and that those companies would then share it with insurance companies when you were shopping for auto insurance and you said, oh, okay, insurance company, you can get third-party reports about me. It was very surprising to them. And with General Motors specifically, there were some people who said, I never turned on Smart Driver. And it seems that they were enrolled unknowingly, maybe at the dealership. You know, the salesperson turned it on because they get bonuses for enrolling people in OnStar Smart Driver.
Wow. I urge everybody to go read that story. I'll post it out later as well. And the lesson here, I think, is drive an old car. Kashmir Hill, New York Times. Thank you very much. Wow. All right. Coming up, the hottest places to invest your money right now. And some may have little to nothing to do with the good old US of A. That's next. Let's talk investing overseas, because as good as our stock markets have done, some around the world have also done better or just as well, especially this year. The Italian stock market up nearly 10%, the Netherlands up 8.3%. And the FTSE Ireland Index is up 8.2 this year, beating the S&P 500's return of 7.3. And as we approach St. Patrick's Day, we always love talking about Ireland and investing in Ireland. Joining us now is Michael Lohan. He is the CEO of IDA Ireland. Agencies trying to bring global investment to Ireland. Why anybody wouldn't want to be there, I don't know, Michael. It's good to have you on set.
Thanks very much.
It's amazing. A Lohan gets on with a Sullivan. It just works out like this. Listen, forever, though, there is a serious topic here. Ireland had this huge tax advantage, and it was really just seen as this tax tiger. Things changed.
Yeah.
How does Ireland compete now?
Yeah, so I think, Brian, you're correct in that Ireland competes globally, and we have been doing so for 75 years. Like this year, we celebrate our 75th year. But it's not just tax. Actually, where Ireland is competing and winning is talent, it's innovation, it's pro-enterprise, and it's stability and certainty. And that's what's setting Ireland apart for the last 75 years.
Well, how do you get the workforce of tomorrow? Listen, Ireland is an amazing. Yeah. I urge everybody to go there. It's like what everybody, people literally playing music in the pubs, nicest people you'll ever meet. But it's an island.
Yeah.
It can be cold and it can be rainy. Yeah. How do you attract the best talent there?
Yeah, well, how we attract the best talent is through two means. First of all, we're actually developing that talent ourselves through our own education system. And secondly, you know, we're an open economy, so actually we attract a lot of talent in. We have free flow of talent from around the globe into Ireland. And as you look today at the moment, as we look at our cohort of companies, 30% of the workforce in FDI companies is non-Irish. So real diverse international workforce in Ireland, having careers in Ireland, and I suppose seeing Ireland as a place for their future.
And what I think a lot of people, and one of the reasons I like having you on, one of the things that I did not realize, by the way, perfectly blunt until I went there, was how big the presence is of Apple, of Google, of these huge American tech companies, especially in that new Docklands area where they kind of redeveloped it, these hip sort of buildings. How important American technology is to Ireland. We talk about artificial intelligence every day here and twice on Sunday. Is it going to be a big deal to Ireland as well?
Absolutely. And I think when you think of Ireland, you know, and there's a number of things. The Irish economy has grown on the back of foreign direct investment. And we currently today have 1,800 companies, foreign direct companies in Ireland. 950 of those are US headquartered companies.
Wow, and they more than half.
Yeah, more than half. And they have changed the landscape in Ireland, both societally and from an economic perspective. And the future for us is that long-term partnership. You know, we continue to support our FDI client companies as they look to the areas of technology, but also life sciences, international financial services. You know, we have the top companies across all of those areas and advanced technologies in manufacturing. So they're the key sectors that's underpinning our economy and that's driving, I suppose, not just the Irish economy, but the European and global economy as well.
My guess is your job here this week is not just to celebrate St. Patrick's Day US style, but to convince some companies to come over. Am I right?
Yeah.
Wild stab at that. that one there, Michael.
Yeah, well, in fairness, when I'm here in the US or indeed any part of the world, our job is to make sure we get the message out as to why Ireland, what Ireland has to offer in terms of that pro-enterprise and stability and certainty. And in a world where we see so much change, an island like Ireland, you know, where you have that stability and that certainty, has become so important. And you're right, this week is a great week. It started great last night. And it's from today we actually had the ringing of the bell at the New York Stock Exchange.
Love it.
So I'm looking forward to a great week here in the US and all things Ireland.
There you are. It's shocking. There's green on the screen. And we appreciate it, by the way, for a tiny country producing the amount of musicians and rally drivers. You know what that is.
Yeah.
It's been amazing. Michael Lohan, really appreciate it. Good luck this week.
Thank you very
much. Have a little fun. Spend a little money while you're here.
I will indeed.
All right. Let's get now to our Quicker Than the Ticker. All the best of the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Is it time to go phoneless for good? A new survey of American teens found 72% say they often or sometimes feel at peace when they don't have their phones. Go figure. Banning legacy admissions. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin just signed a bill ending college admissions advantages through family connections, public colleges in the state, the second state to do so after Colorado. Airbnb prohibiting indoor security cameras globally. Previously, Airbnb allowed hosts indoor cameras in common spaces. Creepy. Outdoor cameras, though, they're still permitted. Need for speed. Porsche unveiling one of the fastest road cars ever. The electric 1,093 horsepower Taycan Turbo GT come to market this summer for around $230,000. Speaking of money, a lamb, not a Lambo, sold for $500,000 by an 11-year-old. It was at the Junior Market Lamb and Goat Charity Auction at Rodeo Houston in Texas. The auction meant to support agriculture and Texas youth.
And that's all the time we've got. Coming up, it is Make It Monday. It's also Monday. And we'll meet the entrepreneur who made a $1 billion empire out of coconut water. And as we celebrate Women's Heritage Month, we are sharing the stories of some of our newly named CNBC Changemakers, an annual list of 50 women who are innovating and transforming business. Here is Molly Hay, Element Biosciences CEO and co-founder.
When changemakers can challenge the status quo, they will meet adversity. So I think that changemaker will have to be driven by a profound higher purpose to bring great benefits to human society. Only then the changemakers can motivate themselves and transcend these kind of adversity into motivations.
It is time for Make It Mondays. And tonight we've got another edition of Made It. We've got the co-founder of the billion-dollar brand Vita Coco. It is one of the top-selling coconut water brands in America. Here's the story.
Coconut water today is the fastest growing category in the beverage aisle in North America. It's one of the most common consumed beverages in the entire tropical world.
I'm Mike Kerbin, I live in New York City, and I'm the co-founder and executive chairman of the Vita Coco Company.
When we started Vita Coco in 2004, there were no other real coconut water companies in the United States. There were some ethnic food brands that had canned coconut water, but they weren't readily available in general trade. So this is our iconic package. It's kind of this odd square box. You don't see a lot of beverages in this type of packaging. And it's the way coconut water was packaged in Brazil at the time. It came in this Tetra Pak because they had taken the same technology that they use for packaging shelf-stable milk and applied it to coconut water because coconut water oxidizes very quickly. And Tetra Pak keeps it from oxidizing. When we started Vita Coco, we only had one item, and it was a 330 ml regular Vita Coco, the blue one. Looks like this. And then quickly we realized we were sitting there with one little facing on the shelf and we needed more.
I would say a big one was when we first got Whole Foods. And then another big one was when we sold part of the company to a group of celebrities, Madonna, Matthew McConaughey, Anthony Kiedis. They invested in the business and then they started talking about the category and the brand.
We created a partnership with Rihanna in, I believe, 2009, right as she was exploding. The timing was perfect. Vita Coco is our core business, but at the Vita Coco Company, we're looking to, over time, create a portfolio of healthy beverage brands. To ring the opening bell, it was just an incredible feeling. It was a moment to stop and think and recognize what we had achieved. We've grown the business tremendously since the IPO. We see a big opportunity to continue to expand across the globe for Vita Coco.
And Michael Kerbin joining us now. Michael, hey, congrats on your success. So there's Make It, and then there's Made It. You have 100% made it. All right.
Thanks.
Let's be honest, okay? Vita, very good for you, by the way. A lot of oxygen. You know, it's a rehydration machine. The taste can be polarizing to some. How do you, what's the challenge of making it accessible and tasty to all?
Yeah.
As I take a sip.
Well, the one you're tasting right now, the pressed one, is coconut water with coconut puree, actually. So it tastes a little bit different. It tastes more like a pina colada, something that somebody might expect coconut water to taste like. We started this business 20 years ago. Coconut water was one of the most prevalent beverages across the tropical world. It's drank in everybody's home for all these different occasions, but it wasn't available in the U.S. And I think over the years, you know, consumers have gotten to know what coconut water tastes like. It's kind of like water with a bit of a texture and a bit of a sweetness, but it's incredibly replenishing for your body. It's great for mixing in cocktails. It's great for using in smoothies, mixing with your green powders, all of these type of things. And over the years, we built the business into roughly a $500 million in revenue business, trading on NASDAQ, market cap roughly around $1.5 billion. Yeah. So it's taken off. It's worked.
This is my first time trying the pressed, and you're right. I love the taste of coconut, like frosting and pina coladas. That's kind of what it tastes like. So you're also, you know, the big challenge of drinks is distribution, right? I would imagine just getting it. What was the biggest hurdle you faced, and how did you overcome it?
How much time do we have? I mean, we've been
about 40 seconds.
Great. So lots of challenges over the years. I would say from a distribution standpoint, it was how did we hit as many stores as possible in a day. Back then, I used to put on my rollerblades and go store to store to hit as many stores as possible, and I got a lot done. Today, we have a partnership with Keurig Dr. Pepper. We're expanding globally with partnerships across Western Europe and continue to build out this category that we believe will be a very large category one day.
You know, by the way, congratulations. I'd be surprised at how many, I'll bet you there's a lot of businesses back in the day that succeeded and grew because of the rollerblade. I have a personal story on that, but I'm out of time for my own show. Michael Kerbin, Vita Coco Press, thank you so much. Congrats on your success. Be
thank
well.
You. Thank you.
All right, folks, that's it for Last Call for tonight, but it's only Monday. We'll see you tomorrow. Shark Tank is next. Take care.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.